In Krishna consciousness, we all have a goal. The ultimate goal is to attain love for Krishna and then live in a relationship with Krishna which fully satisfies the heart. The goal is to love Krishna, and then we also have a process. We have a process of sadhana bhakti that we perform, chanting every day together, singing in kirtan, reading the books, praying, worshipping the deities. By this process is said, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunoi Shravanadi Sudachite Kareya Yudoi, that love for Krishna is within you. You just have to awaken it by the process. So there is a goal, there is a process. However, there's one more very important thing in Krishna consciousness, and that is lifestyle and character. Because if you do the process, you can do the process diligently, but you may not get the fruit of the process, you may not achieve the goal if your lifestyle and character is not correct. Therefore, the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Bahu janma kari jadi shravana kirtan tagutana paye Krishna pade prema dhan. Bahu janma, for many lifetimes. Kari java shravana kirtan, you can do hearing and chanting for many lifetimes. Tagutana paye Krishna pade prema dhan, but you may not get prema, you may not get love, if you don't follow along with other things that support the process. And therefore, lifestyle in Krishna consciousness is extremely important. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are five topics. One of them is the soul, one of them is God, one of them is karma, one of them is time, and what's the final one? Material nature, prakriti. And do you know how many of the 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita deal with material nature, the modes of material nature? How many do you think? Out of 700, how many verses of the Gita do you think deal with the three modes of material nature? 500?
Maybe 100.
100? You get the prize, yes, 100. 100 verses of 700 verses in the Gita are just dealing with the three modes of material nature. That means it's an incredibly important topic. We may say, no, as devotees we go beyond ignorance, passion and goodness. We're in pure goodness, are we? Here Srila Prabhupada says, the process is first come to goodness. Then goodness is like a springboard. From springboard of goodness, you can get to pure goodness. So much of what Krishna is teaching in the Bhagavad Gita is about developing lifestyle, developing habits in the mode of goodness. And here, Krishna is saying that the modes are always competing. So if you don't know what is goodness, if you're not attentive to developing goodness in your life, then there's a good chance that we're going to go into passion and ignorance. And then Krishna consciousness is going to become very, very difficult. So somehow or other, how to become situated in goodness? The modes of nature are all pervading. The modes of nature are in everything outside of you, and the modes of nature are also within you. According to the modes of nature that you contact outside of you, it affects the modes of nature within you. Isn't it? Have you noticed? If you are in, if you hang around in the bedroom for a long time, you start feeling a bit sleepy. Right? It just kind of has that effect on you, right? And according to the modes within us, we also create the environment around us in the same types of modes. Have you noticed also? Some people come into a room and within a few minutes they have to start cleaning everything up and getting it in order. Because inside, probably there's a lot of goodness there. So they need order. So they need everything around them like that. Otherwise they can't function. So it's very interesting. The modes are in everything around us and the modes are within us. So now what Krishna does in the Gita is he's explaining many, many different things inside of us and outside of us in the three modes of nature so that we can start to develop a life which is completely in goodness. Eventually we want to get to a point where our lifestyle is completely in goodness, where all of our habits are in goodness. Is it difficult?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for being honest. It's difficult. Okay, let me ask you a question. Is it easier to develop the habit of eating chocolate? Or is it easier to develop the habit of waking up early in the morning? What do you think?
Chocolate.
Easier, right? Kind of like you don't have to train yourself that or you know, eat all the unhealthy things. Develop a habit to eat all the unhealthy things. I'm really trying, bro. I've been trying for years to develop the habit of eating all the unhealthy foods. No. It kind of comes naturally, isn't it? But good habits, progressive habits, habits in the mode of goodness seem very difficult to develop. Have you noticed? So one devotee once asked me, Krishna has stacked the odds against us. Because all the habits in the modes of passion and ignorance are so easy to develop. But all the habits in the mode of goodness are difficult to develop. Would you agree?
Yes.
So why is it like that? Why is Krishna making it so hard? Why is Krishna making it so hard for us to develop habits in the mode of goodness? Habits like being clean, being regulated, waking up very early, being truthful. Why is it so hard? Yes.
Because it reveals him.
Because it reveals him. Okay, so you're saying it's Krishna specifically made habits in the mode of goodness difficult because those habits bring us closer to him. Okay, excellent. Mataji, yes. It's our desire. Yes, and you've mentioned the wonderful word inclination. Everyone understands this word, inclination? I don't know in Swedish how you say inclination. Understand, like if you're walking up a road and it's uphill, then it's inclined in this way. You understand? Like inclination is a way in which something is positioned. So Srila Prabhupada uses this word often, inclination. Each one of us in this room have an inclination. So say for example, something is inclined like this. Yeah? Downhill, like this. And if I pour water on it, where will the water go?
Down.
It's naturally going to go there. Right? All the water is going to go there because that's the way in which the ground is inclined. Tomorrow, if I switch the inclination this way and you pour the water from the same place, where will all the water go? In the other direction. So right now, for us, many of us, not all of us, developing habits in the mode of goodness are extremely difficult because inside of us we are inclined towards passion and ignorance. And therefore, developing habits in the mode of goodness is very difficult. However, once within us we establish more goodness, it will be very difficult to live in passion and ignorance. There will come a time when you can't stand to wake up after 5 o'clock in the morning or after 4 o'clock in the morning. It will just be like, my whole day is finished. It will come to a point where you come in a room, and if it's unclean, you just feel like, oh my God, I can't stay here. Gradually, what happens is when we develop the inclination of goodness within us, then the ability to develop everything around us in goodness comes. So therefore, what Krishna is doing in the Gita is he's teaching us so much about what does goodness look like. If we learn to live in the mode of goodness, not just spiritually, but even on a material level, it will give you so many benefits. For example, if you live in the mode of goodness, generally you'll have better health. Physical health, emotional health, will be much better in the mode of goodness. If you live in the mode of goodness, your ability to achieve things in the world, even in material sphere, will increase. If you want to be a high achiever in the world, if you want to achieve your potential, goodness is the way to unlock that potential. If you live in the mode of goodness, you know even your relationships with others will be better, because your consciousness will be in a much better place to actually give the best of yourselves to others. If you live in the mode of goodness, your character will also improve. The qualities, the personality, the way in which you carry yourself in this world will be much better. And then ultimately, if you live in the mode of goodness, then you'll have the best chance of succeeding in Krishna consciousness. So sometimes what happens in Krishna consciousness is we focus a lot on the process of Krishna consciousness, but we don't put enough emphasis on the lifestyle of Krishna consciousness, living in the mode of goodness. So therefore Krishna is giving us many, many clues about how to be aware in every part of your life, how to incorporate goodness. Okay, so we have to become very aware of what goodness looks like. Okay, I'm going to do a quiz with you. I'm going to name some things, habits, or observations, or things that might happen to us in the day. And I want you to tell me whether it's ignorance, passion, or goodness. Yeah, ready? Procrastination. You understand? Ignorance, procrastination, you understand? It means when you have to do something, but you keep putting it off.
Ignorance.
How do you say it in Swedish? Protect. Okay, anyway. Next slide.
Transform, you transform, you wait.
Yeah, so procrastination is what mode?
Ignorance.
Ignorance. Stealing a product from a shop.
Ignorance.
Passion?
Ignorance. Stealing ignorance.
Stealing is ignorance.
Yeah.
Eating too much food or eating too much prasad?
Passion.
Passion? Listening to classical music.
Passion.
Passion.
Passion?
Goodness.
What do you say?
Passion.
Okay. Yes. I'm not making a judgment. I'm just seeing what you think about that.
Passion.
Passion.
Okay. Ravi Shankar. Goodness. Okay. Goodness. We give Ravi Shankar the benefit of the doubt. Hanging out at a pub. Gossiping.
Ignorance.
Passion.
Arguing and swearing.
Passion.
These are all ignorant. Revising 6 months prior to an exam steadily.
Goodness.
Goodness. Oversleeping.
Ignorance.
Arriving late to a meeting.
Passion.
Browsing Facebook.
Outside
of the looking at, I guess.
Outside of Listening.
Stress from multitasking. Giving in a relationship without expecting return.
Goodness.
Video games.
Ignorance.
Interesting, huh? So it's a good exercise, because gradually what we should be able to do is at every stage of the day we should be able to understand I'm falling into passion, I'm falling into ignorance, I'm embracing goodness. That's why Krishna is giving so much details for us to understand this. And the modes of nature, you can connect it to any aspect of life. Let's take, for example, leadership, okay? And don't think that leadership only means the temple leadership. Everyone's a leader. If you're a parent, you're a leader. If you have someone who looks up to you, you're a leader. If you're in charge of a service, you're a leader. Everyone is practically a leader. So, can someone describe to me, what does leadership in the mode of ignorance look like? Can anyone give a bit of a description? What would you see in the in a leader who's leading in the mode of ignorance? Can you give me some?
The president of Russia.
Pardon me?
The president of Russia.
Okay. Well, we won't name anyone at this point, but can you give some of the character traits of what leadership in ignorance looks like? Yeah.
Trying to come up with some ideas, but it's really, messed up, and there's no connections.
Okay, so there's no vision. There's no vision. There's no future plan. There's no kind of sense of where are we going. Yeah. It would depend on the motivation behind it.
Yeah, but like playing to people's lower qualities to get them to follow. You see that in
yeah, that could be ignorance and passion. Not honoring your duties, not being responsible, not carrying out your tasks, not keeping your word. Yeah.
Yes, I'm thinking of this example that Prabhupada very often used about the knife. You can use it to kill somebody and you can also cut bread and be very useful. The same that you can use to be on the computer to look for devotees, picture of Krishna. You can bring on the pump to teach about Krishna consciousness. Then if you put the number one first, Krishna, then all the zeros can
actually... So it depends how we use something.
Yes,
that depends.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
no, that's
can
a very
you
good
definitely point. Say that this is Radha or this is it's what you're doing with the intention?
Yeah, that's true. But what we're saying here is that we'll be able to identify what is misuse of something by looking at the characteristic traits of that thing in the mode of ignorance. Yeah?
Micromanagement and anger.
Micromanagement, trying to control everything, and anger, unbalanced reactions to what people are doing. Yeah, this is ignorance.
Envy.
Envy, yeah. A leader is supposed to empower. But when the leader feels threatened, that no, they may become better than me, or they may overshadow me, that's considered ignorance. Yeah, good. So what does leadership in the mode of passion look like then?
Stressful.
Stressful, yeah. Lack of ability to maintain our own personal balance. Yeah, what else? Does a passion have vision?
Strong selfish motivation.
Selfish motivations. A leader who's not in it for what the people want, but in it to see what they can get from it. Yeah, that's passion. Yeah.
Rashness.
rashness, making decisions without proper contemplation, without understanding what the long-term ramifications are.
Overcomplicating
things, yeah?
Interested in position and fame and glory.
Interested in name, fame, personal success, yes. Looking more at short-term gain rather than what's going to be the long-term gain. Focusing on results. Focusing on getting things done, but not necessarily the way in which those things are done. Focusing on projects over people. That doesn't mean we don't care for projects, but with people in the picture. But passion, no. Just what's the project? Yeah.
Starting things up and not being able to maintain them or get into that steady place.
Right, yeah. Being able to, a leader in the mode of passion is great starter, amazing, but then fails to have succession plan or sustainability plan to kind of look at it in the long term. Very good. And then mode of goodness, we can kind of invert and see, yes, mode of goodness means all the opposites of these things, that there's a long-term vision like this.
Maintain,
yeah. And they... Goodness means action with intelligence. Prabhupada uses that. Yeah.
I'm just curious. Sometimes I've heard it said that to move from ignorance to sattva, like right from ignorance to sattva, may sometimes be hard. So you have to come up to passion first. Like if someone is very apathetic, they may have to get like angry or like get some power to actually move. And then go up to sattva.
Yeah, that can be true. Because first you need something to work with. Right? So then, you know, like even us, like first we, and we'll talk about devotional service in different modes as well, but first we understand that sometimes it's difficult to be devotional service in the mode of goodness immediately. So we say, at least do devotional service, even if it's in the mode of passion, and then gradually we'll work with that passion and purify it.
Yeah.
So yes, it can be like that.
Yeah.
Although in certain situations, you can also go direct. If to some extent, if you look at some of the hippies that were attracted to the movement in the 60s, it's kind of like, okay, Prabhupada may have, by his potency, been able to take them from a life in which was very inertial, very unguided, almost like very steeped in characteristics of ignorance, and then immediately brought them to a higher level. But yeah, you're right. It's good to get some activity going.
You have to go
to graduate
process. You cannot like jump and come to certain platform from the word ignorance or something passionate. Usually it's not ignorance and passion. You have to go gradually come to good.
Yeah, just why Prabhupada says here that goodness is like a springboard.
Please come
to the
mode of goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So like this, one can reflect. If one is a parent, one can reflect. How am I dealing with my children? Is it in ignorance, passion, goodness? Like a common characteristic of parenting in the mode of passion is trying to fulfill your desires through your children. Like trying to fulfill your aspirations through them rather than letting them live their journey, rather than letting them find their dharma. So like that.
But when it comes to, we should engage our children in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. But according to their propensities.
Maybe the child wants something else, so we said no. Worship Krishna.
Even that's an art. I'm not a parent, and maybe other parents can also share on this. But Chanakya, he says, when you're bringing up children, in the first 5 years, you should give a lot of love. In the second 5 years, you should give discipline. and thereafter you should give friendship and independence. So there's a sense in which even if you're a Krishna conscious parent, it's not just about drilling it into children to practice Krishna consciousness. It's giving love, giving direction and wisdom, and then ultimately letting them find it for themselves. Because a person forced against their own will is of the same opinion still. So we have to also give that ability with love. So yes, I mean, these are different models that you can use, you can apply it. Like driving, for example, can also be in the modes. You know, what is driving, what do you think, Lakshman? What does driving in the mode of ignorance look like?
Sleeping?
Yeah,
exactly. Driving.
Yeah, the sleeping of devotees are notorious for that. I also once was coming from a program at 70 miles per hour. I swerved 3 lanes on the highway. I was like, whoa, that was scary. Yeah, sleeping, a car that's not maintained.
Drinking and driving.
Speed.
Losing your driver's license all the time.
Exactly. Passion is like speeding, overtaking, very
rage.
Aggressive, road rage, yeah, all these kind of things. And then
standing at the stoplight, looking at everyone, and then I shall be.
Studying can be in the three modes of nature as well. Like, anyway, I mean, we can do all these examples that you can see it. Yeah.
I'm curious, when it comes to like motivating yourself or to taking action or pursuing an ideal, the way that you communicate with yourself to get yourself to take the action, what does that look like in ignorance, passion, and goodness?
Oh, sorry, I kind of skipped a beat when you said that. Can you just repeat that?
Yeah, so the way that you motivate yourself, like people
how
have different strategies for motivating themselves to take action. What does that look like in ignorance, passion, and goodness?
Oh, okay. So when we try to motivate ourselves to do something, what does that look like in ignorance, passion, and I guess passion is the one where you try to motivate yourself by giving some carrots of immediate benefit that kind of, that may not be sustainable, you know, in the long run. You know, like, I think in ignorance, motivation is through fear. At one point in one of our temples, if one of the brahmacharis would come late to Mangalarti, they would have to write, like, do you have in Sweden lines? You never had that at school? Lines?
What is that?
Okay, lines is like, it's a British thing. It's like in school, when the child does something wrong, then you have to write the same line, but like you have to write it like 200 times. So they used to have in one of our temples, Well, they had it even in my time. Goes on. But they had in one of our temples that if brahmacharis would come late, then what they would have to do is write the Maha Mantra like lines, like 150 times. And then after some time, we realized like maybe this is not the most inspiring kind of interaction with the holy name of Krishna, which is meant to be like something very relishable. But then you build a construct in your mind that the Maha Mantra is punishment. Right? So when we try to motivate an action out of fear or out of intimidation or out of retribution, then that can be motivation in ignorance. Motivation in passion is when you try to do it but for some gain, for some selfish gain that the person will get. That may not be sustainable. You know, sometimes it works, you know. One devotee once told me, like, when he was a teenage kid, then his dad said, if you read all of Prabhupada's books, I'll give you £200. So he did it for the £200, but then he became a devotee, so that was great. But, you know, maybe sometimes that always doesn't always work. And mode of goodness is when you motivate through inspiration. So are you motivating through intimidation? Ignorance. Are you motivating through some kind of immediate gain? Passion. Are you motivating through genuine inspiration because you've managed to get them to believe in this? That's goodness. So it's very interesting, like, even how we deal with people. If you want someone's motivation to be sustainable, it also depends on how you motivate them.
But for your own internal motivation, I met people who come from a better culture, and they have expressed like how they're motivated by duty. Like, so this is my duty. How do I do it? Like, there was a lady who said, both parents work, and then who will do the housework? And I'm saying, you probably have to share if you go for it. And I said, but then I don't get to do my duty.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no, definitely. And Krishna talks about that determination in the different modes and a sense of adherence to duty as being in goodness. Yeah, when one does something out of duty. So yeah, again, yeah. What also another dimension to it is what will motivate someone also depends on their modes as well. So sometimes you have to understand where someone is at and then meet them and then try to raise it. So yeah, it's an art, you know, like the modes are also not just interesting for helping us understand our own psychology, but they're very important for understanding how to deal with others. Like I remember in that book, Nectar of Book Distribution, I can't remember that Mataji's name, very, I mean, her like realizations are like incredible on book distribution. I just found her realizations like wow. And in one realization, she says, when you stop someone on the street to distribute books to them, within like 20 seconds, you got to figure out what modes are affecting this person. You've got to immediately understand, this person is motivated by this, they're concerned about this, right now they're in this kind of state of mind, and immediately then you adjust yourself to match their modes and then bring them up. So it's such a powerful thing when you're able to understand the modes in a very deep way. You can look around you and see why people are acting the way they're acting. Then you will also understand how to help them to change the way they're acting. It's very, very amazing. It's the modes of nature are the most incredible psychology tool. If you want to understand your own psychology and others, there can be no more powerful model than the modes of nature. So, I just end by saying one last thing and then we can open it up if anyone has any questions. In the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, Kapila Dev explains to Devahuti what does devotional service in the different modes of nature also look like. Because we may feel that, yes, I'm performing devotional service and you've been doing for a long time. But then again, it depends on the quality of the devotional service. So if you want to look it up later on, this is third canto, chapter number 29. Texts 8 to 10. This is devotional service in the different modes. Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, is considered to be in the mode of ignorance. So then we have to do a little bit of reflection. In my devotional dealings, in my devotional service, how much do these qualities come out? Envy, pride, violence, anger, and separatist mentality. Interesting. Then Kapila Dev says, The worship of the deities and devotional service by someone with a motive for material enjoyment, fame, and opulence is devotional service in the mode of passion. Enjoyment, fame, opulence, worship of deities, but perhaps neglect of devotees, passion. When a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness. So devotional service which is done out of duty, devotional service which is done for the sincere desire to become purified, devotional service which is done in accordance with scripture and within the boundaries of Vaishnava culture and Vaishnava etiquette, that's devotional service in the mode of goodness. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Lord who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. So this we know. This is also explained in Bhagavatam. Ahaituki apratihata yayatma supresidati. That when devotional service is ahaituki, unmotivated, apratihata, and uninterrupted, yenatma supresidati, then that kind of devotional service not only pleases the Supreme Lord, but completely fulfills the desire and the inner longing of the living entity. So here today I just opened a little bit up about the modes, because sometimes this can be a neglected area. We think it's material, we think it's secondary, we think I'm doing the main thing. But remember, we can have the goal, we can have the process, but if we don't have the supporting lifestyle, the efficacy of that process may be not as active on our consciousness. And so Srila Prabhupada very much stressed that, yes, first be conscious, then be Krishna conscious. We're still trying to locate that quote where that's from, but makes sense. Yes, first be conscious in the mode of goodness, and then Krishna consciousness can come. Okay, so I'll stop there and see whether. Yes, apratihata means uninterrupted. Yes, devotional service should be sustained. Yeah.
Krishna says that you also become conditioned by the modes of goodness. So, could you say something about the danger to get stuck there? Like you become attached to the happiness which the mode of goodness gives you, and how to go forward to come to Shuddhasattva?
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada explains that you can also be bound by the mode of goodness. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gives the example of being in a prison, and then there are different chains. There's iron chains, silver chains, and gold chains. And yes, you can be in gold chains and think you're in a very good situation, but still in the prison. So yeah, therefore, how to not become comfortable with the mode of goodness. Therefore, we always have sadhu sangha, and therefore we always have Bhagavad Shravan. Because sadhu sangha and Bhagavad Shravan is always giving us the vision of where we need to go, where we're ultimately heading. Sadhu sangha and Bhagavad Shravan is reminding us that the world is not a happy place. There's no point becoming comfortable in an uncomfortable place. And so constantly we need to be fueling the urgency that this is ultimately not my home. So the only way to remain free from becoming attached to the mode of goodness is to constantly be developing a spiritual vision of what the ultimate goal is. Mm-hmm. And so, we cannot lose sight of that. Otherwise, you know, on the journey there we get diverted, you know. Mode of goodness looks good, but we need to keep going, keep walking. You know, it's like in India, when you go to buy something in a shop, then you know, like, the first price is never the right price. Mm-hmm. You understood, in India. You have to begin somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, but when you go to shop in India, if you come from the West, then, you know, like, I remember I was shopping for some chadars for the brahmacharis some years ago. So you go into a shop and then they tell you the price, and then you start bargaining a little bit, and then they come down to a price, and you think, like, you translate it in your mind to, like, your local currency. And you think, like, that's so cheap. Yeah, all right, let's do it. You know, but actually, you have to keep bargaining. You have to, you know. Then you have to, you know, you have to start walking out of the shop. No, it's too much, it's too much. Yeah, you know, then they follow you out of the shop. No, I can't, it's too much. No, okay, we go down. So you have to keep going. Like, even though the middle price sounds like pretty good, when you translate it into your currency, you think this middle, it's a good price. You can't stop there. You have to keep going for the ultimate goal. So therefore, even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that from the journey from Shraddha to Prema, you go through Anishtita Bhakti. And then he says there are many stages of unsteady devotion. And one of them is Taranga Rangini. Even sounds nice, the Sanskrit. Taranga Rangini. It means enjoying the benefits of devotion. So sometimes when we come to spiritual life, we're in the mode of goodness, we have a nice lifestyle, good prasadam, good devotee, you know, so it can become, we can just settle for that without the transcendental goal of purifying the heart. So we have to always remember, yes, this is nice, but we must go further. One Gaudiya teacher, he says, we are not looking to become free from attachments. We are looking to become slaves of love. Interesting. No? Like, mode of goodness, devotional service means I want to be freed from all my attachments. I want to be purified. But mode of pure goodness is I want to become a slave of love. So that was nice. Do you want to become free from attachments, or do you want to become a slave of love? That's Gaudiya teachings. So yeah, it's freedom, mukti, that's... becomes inconsequential. But in the beginning, it's good. Like we were talking the other day, someone was asking, like, should we have a desire to go back to Godhead? So yes, no, yes. Right. So should we desire to purify ourselves from devotional service? Yes, no.
But even that motivation, you can do it, you don't want to suffer in this world, but you can do it. If I purify my service, it will be more effective, it will be more pleasing to Krishna.
Yeah.
You know how we would look at it?
Yeah. But even that, I want to be purified, I want to be purified from my... You know, I've got so many reactions, I want to become... It's a good starting point. It's a realistic starting point for most of us. But then we have to keep going. We have to keep going further. Krishna consciousness is like a deep ocean. Some people appreciate the ocean from the beach side. They watch everyone else playing. They're like, oh, you know, some people like that. They just like watching other people in the ocean having a good time, and that they feel nice. And some people go to the side of the ocean and they just like dip their feet in a little bit. That's nice. And some people go into the ocean on a boat and they're surrounded by the ocean, but they're on the surface. And then some people dive from the boat and go into the ocean and go to the depths and find the jewels. So where do you want to be in Krishna consciousness? You want to look at it from the side and watch everyone else have a good time? Or you want to interact with it a little bit here and there and feel like a little bit of the bliss? Or you want to be the person who goes like right in, yes, my whole life is for Krishna, but still on the surface, still not going deep? Or do you want to be like what Rupa Goswami says, the makara? Makara means shark. He says the devotees are like sharks. They're swimming so deep in the ocean of devotion that they don't care for the rivers of liberation. So you want to go deep, find the jewels. So you have to take that process. Get off the beach, get into the ocean, go right into the middle, and then boom, dive in. But it's a process. So we have to encourage each other to keep going deeper. Yes. Hare Krishna. Okay, I think time is ticking on. So thank you so much for your participation. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.